there. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokel, and this is the Hashtag STRS podcast. It's our short podcast. You send us your questions on Twitter using Hashtag STRAsk, and I pose them to Greg. We put them on a timer, and then we post it on the web for your listening pleasure. And
you never pronounced my name like that before.
I know.
She's just gotten so tired of saying it the other way. Like Kokel.
Just got to do things differently.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's December 1st. I'm done with my Christmas shopping. I already got out-of-town stuff shipped.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that because now when we're doing this, you're done, so you will
you'll be done on December 1st? No, I actually am done when we're recording this.
you will be done.
I am done
by
now
that date.
When we're recording. But it's December 1st to the listeners.
Don't you hate people like that? She's all done. Yeah, look at, see? Brooke can't, I mean, she thought she misheard you. She said she is now at the moment, November 27th, as when we're recording, all done with their Christmas shopping.
Yep.
I am too. I'm not getting anybody anything.
Yep.
I'm done.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Been done for a while.
Yep, you have. So, Brooke's going to say something. Oh, still. By November 30th.
Well, still, she's still done with Christmas shopping.
It's the end of November. Yeah. So, everybody else, hurry up. Trying to remember. No,
you know, C.S. Lewis wrote a piece about this.
About Christmas shopping?
About Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it related a lot to this issue. I just read a little bit of it, but I'm going back to it to read it. I think it's in God of the Doc. Because he didn't like it. He didn't like Christmas. And part of it is because of all the shopping you got to do for people that you get stuff because you have to.
Why
and
I
you
get
just
it.
Get something that just kind of fills the niche and all kinds of garbage has gotten
that's
that people don't want.
That's why I do it early, because I want to be thoughtful about it. I want to enjoy it. I want to give people things that I think they'll enjoy.
Yeah, well, that's good for
you. I don't want to just like be on a, you know, be running out of
binge.
Time.
Right. I know.
And
I
be in crowds and stuff. That's exactly why I do it early, because I enjoy it. So
the hardest part is figuring out what someone would like. That's the hardest part for me. Now, you're clever. You just keep your eyes open, and you seem to have insight into all kinds of stuff, because every time you get something from my girls, they love it. I can't think of a single thing I should get them. And the one few times I get it, it's a big mistake, you know. Like the last gift that I gave that I'm really sorry was I gave my daughter an iPhone. That was a huge mistake, okay? So I'm not so good about that. But you seem to hit the right. Would you do my Christmas shopping for me? You just hit the nail on the head every time. Oh, okay. They're not getting none then.
Right.
They're getting something from you. Put my name on it.
Yeah, I already got their presents. So let's get going on this. First question is a sort of Christmas-related one.
Hmm.
Maybe not Christmas. It's more like 9 months before Christmas-related one. Comes from Chesterfield Jim. Did God introduce a Y chromosome to Mary's egg to make her become pregnant, or did he place a whole embryo in Mary without using her egg?
That is definitely a question I'm going to ask him next time I see him. But so far, he hasn't said anything to me about how exactly that happened.
Next time you see him? When's the last time you saw him?
You know, this sounds like a question that got asked last time we were on the air.
Well,
was that?
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No, okay. I have no idea.
A variation of it comes up every once in a while.
Yeah, I have no idea.
God doesn't tell us.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle.
Okay.
I don't know what happened.
Moving on.
He just said, the Holy Spirit will overshadow you, and the power of the Almighty will come upon you, and the X chromosome shall penetrate you. No, it didn't say that part.
They wouldn't even know what that was. Okay.
Well, God knew.
Yeah, but the people in the audience.
Yeah.
Plus, it kind of would have broken
Mary
up.
Mary would have said, huh? No, that we don't have. What the point is, nothing shall be impossible with God. This was a fulfillment of a miraculous prophetic event in the miraculous, marvelous human being of Jesus of Nazareth. Adam was made out of dirt, and he was a true man.
Mm-hmm.
So there doesn't even need to be, it doesn't seem to me, any way God wanted to do it, he could have still made Jesus a true human being, even if he materialized Jesus out of nowhere.
But you do have Jesus. I mean, Adam was the first one. There was no one to descend from, and Jesus is a descendant, and that descent is an important part of verifying who he was and mm-hmm. what he was here to do. Mm-hmm. And so we have the genealogies on Joseph's side,
right,
where he was adopted as in the line of David. But
right.
then we also have the genealogies on Mary's side
in
given,
Luke,
which
right.
seem to have those given as separately from Joseph's kind of seem to imply, or maybe we can infer from them, that these are genetic. This is a genetic in contrast, and so
no. As long as Mary bore Jesus, whether she, in a sense, contributed
surrogacy.
Her cells. Well, you can use the language if you want to, but as long as she bore
Don't
him,
really
then he
to.
Would be of the line. It
right.
seems to me.
Okay, next question comes from Rolfram's. Does 1 Timothy 3:11 refer to deacons' wives or to women serving as deaconesses?
You know that
is deaconess mm-hmm. a valid church office?
That passage, 1 Timothy chapter 3, talks about overseers, which I take to be men. That would be pastors, head pastors, and bishops or church elders. But then it talks about deacons too, and it does say there is an ambiguity about the passage. Okay, I actually don't have a position on this. I just don't have a position on this. I don't know for sure, and I've never been in a position to have to decide. It says here, deacons likewise must be men of dignity, not double-tongued or addicted to much wine or fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith, etc. Verse 11, then, women must likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. Deacons must be husbands of only one wife and good managers of their children and of their households. So it would be very easy to read this. Let me just see something. Verse 11, there's either deaconesses' wives. Yeah, see, it's ambiguous. The word gune, which is translated man or rather woman in the New Testament, could mean wife or it could mean a woman. It has double meaning depending on the context, and it just isn't clear here. The New American Standard, which I just read, seems to leave it open that women might be deaconesses. However, it says women likewise must be dignified, not malicious gossips, temperate, faithful in all things. Next verse, deacons must be husbands of only one wife. It doesn't say wives of only one husband, good managers of their children, their households. So, you know, I guess if I had to just work with this, and I'm not doing any in-depth, I would draw the conclusion that this text looks more like deacons are men. But I'm not going to be that dogmatic about it because I think it can be read otherwise as well.
Deacons are men, yeah, but are the deaconesses only wives of the deacons or can women not married to deacons be deaconesses?
I think the way I'm reading it here is not deaconesses.
Oh, there's no deaconess.
There is no deaconess here, but rather it says the women.
Okay.
It just says the deacons, those are the must be men of dignity, blah, 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 blah. These men must also be first tested, blah, blah, blah. Women likewise dignified. Women or wives likewise dignified. That is, these men must have these qualifications and be married to women that also satisfy certain qualifications, and that only married one of those women, husbands of only one wife, verse 12. So, you know, as it stands, I would lean just on a straight read of the text, a prima facie reading of the text, I would lean more towards the idea that it's not teaching deaconesses are part of the church, but rather men are to be deacons and satisfy all these requirements, including requirements for the character of their wives.
Okay, next question, Ryan Polly 3. How would you define a human being? Culture often says that to be human requires consciousness, heartbeat, emotions. How would you define human being?
I don't think that I don't think it's just a matter of, oh, well, let's all come up with our own definitions. I think what we're doing is we're looking at something and we're trying to find an appropriate way to describe it. When you think about even the language, human being, that is a being of the human kind. That's what a human being is. Pretty straightforward.
Very insightful.
So, yeah, it's not that hard. So the question is, what is a human being? It is a being of the humankind. Now, we have clear case examples of humans. We're not starting from scratch, like you're one and I'm one. My wife is one. So if my wife and I reproduce another being, chances are pretty good they're going to be same kind of being as us, since creatures reproduce after their own kind. And so I don't think it's a matter of just arbitrarily adding things. Well, a human is the only one that has consciousness. Why would anybody say that? Half the humans I know are unconscious.
Animals are conscious.
And animals are conscious. They are other beings that are conscious. Well, half of them I know are. All the human beings I know are unconscious for one-third of their life when they're sleeping. So, you know, these kind of requirements, I think what these become are just clever little tricks to disqualify certain members of the human race from being bona fide members of the human community. And that's what personhood language is meant to do.
And that's the danger of trying to identify these minimal criteria, because anybody who falls below them then don't count as actual humans according to that definition.
Yeah,
then
exactly.
They don't have the rights.
Right.
And of course the attempt to do this originates in the pro-abortion movement.
Yes.
To justify abortion, saying these aren't human beings.
Yeah.
But the problem is any criteria you come up with will also disqualify people who were born, some people who were born also.
That's right. And will also qualify some who are not human.
Right.
And so it's just crazy. The point I'm making in answering this is that it is not who gets to come up with their list and then who's to say whose list is right, because this is not arbitrary. We're looking at a kind of being. The being falls in a certain class, and that class is human. Very straightforward.
So the definition of a human being is that which is beget by a human being.
It's a being of a humankind, and the way we know whether it's a being of the humankind is whether it's a being born of another human.
Okay. Next question comes from Dee Bartmus. If corporate songs with personal pronouns are wrong, you don't like corporate worship songs about us, lots of personal pronouns. So if they're wrong, why are there psalms addressed to the choir master that have personal pronouns?
Well, that's an overstatement of my view of the way it's put. I'm not saying that songs with personal pronouns are wrong. What I've said is that there seems to be an excessive number of songs that seem to be about the person and not about God. So worship is supposed to be Christocentric, centered on Christ, or theocentric, centered on God, not principally anthropocentric, centered on me, person, man. And so when I'm talking I, it turns out that most of what's going on is that I'm reporting my own feelings in the song. So it's an individual, not a group, reporting about their feelings in the song, when most of the people, I suspect, singing the song are not even speaking accurately about their own feelings, which then makes you wonder, then why are we singing about feelings we're not feeling at the moment?
And sometimes I think it's to get ourselves to feel that
way. To generate the feelings. That's right. Well, I don't think worship is about us generating certain feelings. I don't think that's the goal. And so I object to this. And when there's a preponderance of this, then I think it deadens worship, even if people they enjoy the music. You can go to a concert and listen to non-Christian music and get an emotional kind of rush out of it. There are times when speaking of ourselves and our circumstances and our feelings, if you will, is appropriate. We do see that in Psalms. And, look at the Psalm 51 is a confession of sin. Be merciful to me, O Lord, according to thy loving kindness. against thee and thee only have I sinned. So what you have is a first-person perspective there. You have a viewpoint character, an individual is confessing sin, but he is going before God based on the mercies of God, which are extolled all the way down that lengthy psalm. And so the reference to self is one as a sinner, and the reference to God is one as merciful. So there's a different kind of interplay than you see in most songs. You're not going to see people singing songs about them being sinners, not any new songs. It just doesn't seem to happen. There might be an exception here or there, but that's not the trend. So my concern is a trend that is excessively, inordinately, and therefore inappropriately, anthropocentric, centered on human feelings instead of centered on God.
I completely agree with you about all that. I would quibble with
Let's
one
close
point
in prayer, then.
That worship doesn't have anything to do with generating feelings. It is not the primary thing. It's probably not even the secondary or the tertiary thing. But I do think it does have something to do with it. The primary purpose of worship is to extol God.
Right.
But I think as we focus on him and reflect on his attributes and his works in the worship songs and hymns, I think part of the purpose is to generate feelings towards God in us, affection and adoration and love and all those things. It's not among the top purposes, but I think it is one of the purposes.
Right.
Of
I actually agree with the statement. My comment was limited
I
to the idea that we are trying to generate the feelings that we sing about by singing about the feelings we
right.
want to have.
Right. No, we generate our feelings by singing about the object of our worship,
that's
God.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And your concern is a lot of modern worship songs, the object of worship.
Mm-hmm.
The object of the songs is ourselves, not God.
You know, I'm looking at a psalm right now. Yes, I agree with that. Psalm 19, though. And there's a passage here that I actually cited in the last Solid Ground that's coming out in January. And it goes like this. It starts, "The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple." In the Jesus movement, there was a song for this whole section. I know this whole section almost by mm-hmm. heart because of the song. And it was a sweet song that made me feel close to God, and because it was a sweetness about extolling the virtues of God's word as described here in Psalm 19, which is one for the choir director. So here is one that still has an emotional, creates an emotional response in me as I sing on that music from the Jesus movement, reflecting on the words, "The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. Precepts of the Lord are right. More to be desired are they than gold, more than much fine gold." You know that song. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's sweet. So that does do something for my heart
right.
when I sing that song. But notice the focus.
Right.
The law of the Lord.
Right. Over the weekend, I streamed a conference from New York that Tim Keller and his church did on gospel identity, and they contrasted, which we'll talk about more another time, modern identity, traditional identities, and gospel identity. And in the last session, he talked about the practices to instill gospel identity in us, because it's a lifelong project.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the processes were that surprising, because they're the kinds of things the disciplines Christians are encouraged. But one of the points he made overall, too, is that the way culture conveys a lot of its ideas, including where the culture thinks we should get our identity, is through songs. And so you have like Frozen, the let it go. She's throwing off the external standard she can't live up to, and she's just going to be herself and express herself. But then he was talking, too, then about the importance of music and other things that evoke, that kind of connect with us aesthetically and emotionally, because those are things that can then take those truths that we're meditating on and get them really deep down in our souls and our psyches in a way that change us.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I remember watching that movie because my daughter had a party mm-hmm. when that came out. That would be Eva having the party. It bothered me, at first because of the ethic that was being extolled there, but then of course, she gets her comeuppance as everything in her life gets frozen,
right.
And now she's, but that song was the one that stuck in my daughter's head.
Oh, and it sticks in every little girl's head.
All the time, you know, and so she's not thinking, yeah, that got her in trouble. Right. She's just singing the song. So,
well, one of the things I kind of took from it is, because Tim Keller could sing it too, because his granddaughters watch it, is it's not, you know, so obviously his granddaughters watch it, but then they probably talk about it too. But the point was the importance of worship songs is because these are practices that connect us with the truth.
Right.
And we also need to be aware about songs that may be connecting us with lies more mm-hmm. deeply too. So it's probably more than you were asking for, David. But that's it. That's it for this episode too.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yep. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokel. Send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRAsk. Thanks a lot. Bye.